Warning, this podcast contains spoilers for Season 3, Episode 5 of The Mandalorian. Hello, my name is Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Rosie Knight.
And welcome to X-Ray Vision, the Crooked Media Podcast, where we dive deep into your favorite shows, movies, comics, and pop culture.
In this episode, and previously on, Ike Perlmutter is out at Disney.
And good riddance!
Good riddance to bad rubbish! This is a shocking news. And we're going to talk about it and why it matters and what it means for Marvel Entertainment. In the airlock, we're talking about Season 3, Episode 5 of The Mandalorian, which was just a ton of fun. It was really fun.
Really fun.
And we're going to be moaning about those Mandalorians, as always. And in Nerd Out from Mike, he's going to talk about what scene may close out the Mandalorian series.
Of course, if you want to jump around, check the timestamps that may or may not be accurate due to issues beyond our control that we are working on. But check them anyway, because they're there for you to check. Coming up next, previously on. First up, shake up at Disney and Marvel Entertainment. Newsflash, March 29th, New York Times, Ike Perlmutter out at Marvel. Here's the quote. Perlmutter was told by phone on Wednesday that Marvel Entertainment, a small division centered on consumer products and run separately from Marvel Studios, was redundant and would be folded into larger Disney business units. According to two Disney executives briefed on the matter who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss a sensitive personal matter, Ike, for those of you not aware, is one of the execs who, you know, has been a driving force behind certainly the early period of the MCU and the launch of the MCU, and is also a famously spendthrift individual who lobbied loudly and vociferously and aggressively for not doing diverse Marvel movies such as Black Panther and Captain Marvel. He's really, really mad that they made a Black Panther movie.
Very mad.
And voted for Trump twice and said he would do so again in 2024. That's Ike Perlmutter, and he's out. Your thoughts, Rosie Knight?
Well, so yeah, I agree. If you listen to the podcast, you've heard us talk about Ike. He is a very notorious figure in Marvel. He was a board of directors at Marvel Comics in like 1993, went on to take over the company with Avi Arad from Toy Biz. And he was the one who eventually, after establishing Marvel Studios, would sell Marvel to Disney for $4 billion. Now, my biggest thing here, let's go back to that New York Times quote, because this is huge, guys. And I know I can't help it. I love this stuff. It makes me worried. Look, they say Marvel Entertainment, a small division centered on consumer products and run separately from Marvel Studios, was redundant in the eyes of Disney. So Marvel Entertainment is Marvel Comics, and the consumer products that they sell are comic books. So I would say that this is not the last that we've heard of this news. I am very happy that Ike is leaving, and hopefully with him, a lot of those outdated views, not only on race and gender and all that kind of stuff that you mentioned, but also on like the way workers are treated. He was known, like you said, for not spending money, yes, for cutting corners.
And it's also just like, Kevin Feige and others, not to mention returning CEO Bob Iger, have had to spend in the past so much energy like keeping Ike at bay, that hopefully things will get easier on their side now.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I am very interested that this news came out the way it did. Because, like, I saw a great tweet where somebody said, you know, this is like Trump arrest day for comic book fans. And that is true. Like, this is actually one of the biggest shocks about this news is that Ike still had any kind of responsibility, because this chairman role that they had given him had kind of, it seemed like he'd handed his responsibilities over to people like Feige, Alan Fine. So the fact that he is still needed to be laid off was kind of a shock, but a good shock. But I do not believe that Disney would have wanted this to be the way the news came out, because the question that me and many other people are now asking is, what right. happens to the comics division.
Right.
In the New York Times, they said Marvel Entertainment was based in New York City. Based on all of this reporting, the Wikipedia page for Marvel Entertainment now says that the company no longer exists and is defunct. So we know Marvel's still going to keep making comics. The question is, what does that look like? And how does this impact the people who work there day to day? And also, what does it mean for Marvel to no longer be in New York? DC Comics takes place in all these made up places, Metropolis, yeah. Gotham. But let's think about Marvel. It's like looking out your window. You're in the X-Men, you're in Westchester, you're in New York, you're with Spider-Man. That location has always been Marvel's home.
And it has famously kind of been based in New York for its entire yeah. life. Although, some might say, what's the big deal? DC moved their comics offices to LA some years ago, blah, blah, blah. It's a big shift, and there's a lot of mm-hmm. questions we don't know about what this means.
Exactly. It's about keeping our ears to the ground. If anyone from Marvel wants to let us know what's going on, we would love to know. I'm very interested, and I'm hoping that everyone at Marvel who does great work making those comics had prior knowledge about this. I'm interested to see where it goes next. But yeah, I'm living a Margaret Thatcher Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead moment. Like, obviously, we're all celebrating that Ike will no longer be a part of this. I just want to know what's going on with the comics.
Well, obviously, a lot of information is still to emerge, but it seems like... I'm sorry to theorize, but here it is.
It
seems like something more substantive, perhaps, than a rebrand where mm-hmm. they fold Marvel Comics and yeah. start a new company called Marvel Comics Plus or something. That all the people that work for that company have been fired, but now are instantly hired to work for this company that's a completely different entity.
This is, if you are somebody who loves comic books,
yeah.
ever since AT&T and Warner and these kind of DC mergers that have been impacting DC Comics for so long, those conversations about what does a corporation know about how to make comics? Will they get rid of the comic arm? Will they license it out? That has always been part of the conversation. With Disney buying Marvel, people wondered if this would happen. We don't know what it's going to look like, but we can assume from the fact that they're calling Marvel Entertainment redundant that it will change. Now, I will say DC moving to LA was like a stroke of genius, and the DC offices are beautiful, and they hire a bunch of wonderful different people who work there. And I'm sure that there's a version of Marvel moving to LA that would be great. It makes sense with the studios, with the movies.
It does make sense.
But what will that look like, especially as we are now in the first week of the promised 7,000 layoffs that Disney is doing? So, you know what? I will give them a slight bit of credit for starting with execs. Because when does yeah. that ever happen? But yeah, this is kind of huge. I expect the ramifications to be large and continuing. But as Jason pointed out, we don't really know that much now. We do know that this was likely in response, at least in part, to Ike Perlmutter trying to do a shadow takeover of the Disney board with his friend Nelson Peltz, which was in the news a lot, and it's actually very interesting to go and read about. So if you're wondering if you're looking for the why, it is not really because of his bad behavior in the past. It's because he tried to take over the company
because of his, in part, certainly, ill mm-hmm. feelings about Bob Iger, who shelved him after he lost a power struggle with Kevin Feige over again, the fact that Ike didn't want to make a Black Panther or a Captain Marvel movie. Bob Iger...
$2 billion movies, can we just say.
Right, Bob Iger, in his book or in some other interview, was asked how... if Ike's feelings about that perhaps fueled that takeover bid. And he said, and Iger was quoted as saying, well, you'd have to ask Ike about that, but let's put it this way. He was not happy about it. And I think that unhappiness exists today.
I agree.
Anyway, up next, returning to the Mandalorian in the airlock. We're stepping out of the airlock and onto the mean streets. The beautiful, once and will be again beautiful streets of Navarro for season 3, episode 5 of The Mandalorian at Disney Plus, titled Chapter 21, The Pirate, written by Jon Favreau, directed by Peter Ramsey. Super, super fun episode.
Real Star Wars vibes here.
Absolutely.
If you love those Star Wars vibes, if you want to feel like you're a little kid with a R2-D2 lunchbox and you're playing with your cheap plastic but beloved Kenner toys, this is the episode that's going to send you back into that nostalgia. And so much happens.
I cannot agree more. A lot happens. So we start on Navarro. High Magistrate Greef Karga is playing SimCity on his desk with his people around him. He's in the middle of this development meeting and is like, where are we going to put the railroad? We got to put the rail spur over here. We're talking about cargo. There's going to be massive cargo moving through the city. And the meeting is broken up by the arrival of Pirate King Shard's flagship. Shard hails Karga. And Shard is like, holy shit, Greef Karga. That sounds like you, Greef Karga. But the guild master of the Navarro hunters, the famed Navarro bounty hunters, but all I see before me is a pampered nobleman. And Shard, of course, is still hot that Karga and Din Djarin shot his pirates.
In the street, dead. In the six of them.
Now, you know, they were up to no good, as pirates often are, and Karga notes quite accurately that they drew first, and Shard is like, well, now I'm going to shoot first. Karga then tries to bluff. He's like, hey, you want to fuck with us? You're going to fuck with the New Republic, because we're part of the New Republic now. What about that? And Shard is like, well, I just looked at Galactic Wikipedia, and it says you guys are independent. So who's lying? Is it Wikipedia or is it you? And I know that Moff Gideon is not here anymore because he is either dead or was on trial and nobody fucking knows where he is. So what's going to happen? And Karga's like, well, okay, what about the X-Wing patrols that come through here every once in a blue moon? And Shard is like, well, I'll take my fucking chances. Peace. And then he fucking hangs up and starts opening fire on the city. With streets packed with civilians.
Yeah,
they're just getting
just like
murdered
brutal.
Left and right.
Also as well, like, I feel like I love Carl Weathers. I love Greef Karga. But I also feel like, is the New Republic really going to stop a pirate? Like, not like, could they stop them? I'm sure they could. But like, is that threat really so big? I feel like he may have played the wrong card there.
Well, as we will see, the New Republic is just they're a new administration and they're having a lot of trouble getting their business off the ground. Greef Karga gestures to his astromech droid. And he then, although we don't see it, records help us, you're our only hope message. And then when his protocol droid runs up and is like, hey, we got to get out of here. We got the escape pod ready. Karga bravely, courageously is like, no, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving my people. I need to lead my people back to the most significant rise in property values in Navarro history. We're coming back. We will rebuild.
We are making real estate money. We cannot leave.
We will rebuild. And he tells his people, hey, head for the hills, go for the dunes, and we'll regroup, just get out of the city. Then we go to an unknown jungle planet where that is a base for the New Republic's Adelphi Rangers, and we see our friend Captain Teeva.
Woo!
He's taking some R&R at the base cantina when he's told that there's a message. He puts it in the player and realizes it's Greef Karga asking for help with a ongoing pirate siege. And Karga says, quote, I'm afraid that our planet will fall and Shard will turn this into a pirate base. And we hear a voice. Someone has overheard this and says, oh, I really thought Navarro was going to make it. And it's our friend Zeb of the Ghost Crew looking legitimately fucking incredible.
Unbelievable.
In live action.
Unbelievable.
Can we get ILM on the volume on? I didn't have any particular notes on the MCU Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, but like this looked great.
He looked amazing. The Mandalorians just consistently knocks it out of the park with the way they mix practical and CG.
Oh, it's so good.
And Zeb looked so good here. Like, this is definitely a moment where, if you know, you know. And if you know, you scream. Like, this
I
is
was,
like, when you
I
see him, you're like,
it.
Oh, my God. And we'll get into this more, but I think this hints at probably a much bigger inclusion that we'll get this season.
I completely agree.
But this was so cool. Looked brilliant, super cool, totally within character. I just feel like it was just all good. 10 out of 10, good stuff.
I could not agree more. I like started shouting. I was like, holy shit! Teva tells Zeb that he's going to go to command and he's going to ask for permission to take on the pirates. But as we've seen, as we've already talked about, the transition from two decades of empire is not easy. It's a mess. Like, just being legitimately charitable to the Republic, this is hard work. Mm-hmm. And then Zeb says, hey, they're swamped. They haven't returned a message in weeks. Teva then decides, okay, I'm going to give it the personal touch. I'm going to fly to Coruscant and I'm going to get Navarro the help it needs. Teva saunters into command to see Colonel Tuttle on Coruscant. And it's a good example of how chaotic things are right now for the new administration, that Tuttle, ostensibly Teva's commanding officer, he cannot even get his droid to follow orders. He's like, hey, droid, don't put that tray of records there on my desk because I need, and then droid's just like, fuck you. And then just drops the tray right there. I'm like, holy shit.
Can I just also just talk about it? I was just so happy to see Tim Meadows. This is just like
what
such
a wonderful,
good,
what a surprise.
Fun casting. What a good surprise. He's in a really great episode of Poker Face, which I'd love to see him. And this was so good because he has the perfect exasperated bureaucrat voice. Like, and you just realize in this one scene and one performance, like, the New Republic is getting nothing done. They are trying their best, but
they are trying
really
hard, and they have the best of intentions, but it's really
hard.
And
they're doing better than some other radical organizations we've seen before.
Yes, we have.
But I mean, they're not trying to replicate the Imperials. They're trying to do their best, but they are stuck in a bureaucratic rut.
I mean, like, there are larger questions here to be asked, like whether a galaxy-spanning government is even a good idea. Like,
yes, I think that's a great question to ask.
But they're trying, and they have good intentions, and they're not very effective right now, but they're trying. Elia Kane, otherwise known as G-68, the former Imperial currently working on some unknown neo-imperial scheme from inside the New Republic leadership.
She's always acting shady as fuck.
I gotta say, don't make evil scheme faces all the time because somebody's gonna notice at some point.
Katie O'Brien is so good as like the villain. Like every time you see her, you're just like, everyone, just look around. She's scheming. She's doing a scheme face. She's looking evil. Like, I believe it. Like, she's doing it and nobody seems to notice. I love it. It's great.
So Teva barges in and Tuttle's like, who the fuck are you? You know, his Rodian, assistant is like, I'm sorry, this guy just barged in. And Teva gets right to the point. He's like, there's a pirate siege on Navarro in the Outer Rim, and a high magistrate I know sent an SOS, and we should do something. Tuttle plays the message. And at that point, G-68 comes in with this helpful offer. Hey, I'm going to the commissary if you want. Like some of those Imperial biscuits, I know you love them. Some people are really
they're delicious, right? One of the good things about the Empire, you know, not very many
of
the biscuits.
The good things, you
cool.
know, like,
they were one of them. They're
the trains.
There.
They made the trains run on time.
Yeah, and the biscuits are delicious.
Yeah, and then Tuttle is like, oh yeah, that's right, G-68. In your capacity as an Imperial soldier under Moff Gideon, noted war criminal, you spent some time in the Outer Rim, right?
For you?
Yeah, what did you know about Navarro? And she's like, yeah, I did spend some time there. And then at that point, Teva notices G-68's very unique kind of red striped badge, which identifies her as a former Imperial and part of the amnesty program. And she is like, well, you know, unfortunately, Navarro never signed the New Republic Charter, so they're not part of this whole thing. And Tuttle notes that, hey, you see how fucked up things are right now. We have member worlds that can't get the help they need. How's it going to look if I go and help some independent planet? And then Teva is like, hey, we got to connect the dots here. There's something bigger. Why is Navarro always coming up? We had reports of stormtroopers in the streets of Navarro. Moff Gideon was known to be skulking around the planet doing who knows what. Meanwhile, ask this lady right next to you because she was serving with him. TIE fighters were flying openly over Navarro. What's with all the action on Navarro? And Tuttle says, okay, you could get to hyperspace with a leap like that. Like, come on. And then Teva's like, how do we know that he basically is like, Moff Gideon could be behind this, right? Like, we don't know where he is. I heard he never made it to trial. Like, what's going on with that? And then, you know, Tuttle again says, I'm just a pencil pusher. I'm just a quartermaster, basically. All I can do is get you things. So what do you need? What can I do for you? And I got to say, before we go further, I think that the amnesty program, I think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a well-meaning program. And I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Maybe there are a lot of positive success stories and good things to come out of it. Like I would assume that the other people that Dr. Pershing and G68 were sitting with back at Amnesty House, like, are not working on neo-imperial conspiracies, right? That said, I don't think that we should allow former Imperials to have this kind of access to New Republic, like, decision-making levers. Why are we just, like, letting former Imperials, like, work in high command?
I also feel like, specifically in this situation, if somebody used to work for Moff Gideon and this planet is connected to Moff Gideon, that's like, this is a conflict of interest, my guy.
I agree.
Like, sorry, you can't be involved in this one. I think what this scene does really well as being funny, because Tim Meadows is, like, really fucking funny, is it highlights how it's really easy for G68 to take advantage of this system because nobody knows what's going on. Tal didn't know anything about the Outer Rim, so he just asks a war criminal who worked for, like, a famous war criminal with a magical sword. He's like, what do you know about it?
Yeah.
And this is exactly how she's managed to rise up the ranks. And it's very interesting to see them kind of explore that.
G68 suggests that, hey, you know, maybe Navarro would sign the charter if we let him get punched in the mouth a little bit by pirates.
Red flag.
Yeah, red flag. Dang, 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 dang.
You very know, fascist.
Maybe we let a little bit of a mass murder happen. They'd understand that they'd want to be under the protective umbrella of the New Republic. Wouldn't that teach them a lesson? And Teva says, sounds like Imperial thinking. It absolutely is.
Mm-hmm.
But then Tuttle is like, oh, you're out of line.
How dare you say that?
You're out of line there. How dare you besmirch the good name of this former war criminal who worked for an even bigger war criminal?
Who's saying some very war criminal sounding things. Like,
yeah. So then G is like, takes the high road. Wonderfully. I love this moment. It's so funny because G says, hey, no. I get this all the time. Listen, as a former Imperial soldier who worked under Moff Gideon's evil infant experimentation regime working to acquire scientific knowledge of horrific and now illegal cloning technology, I get those kind of comments all the time. But I want you to know, I'm a changed person.
Mm-hmm.
I am a different person now. And Teva's like, I mean, that's easy to say when you've been fucking captured, you know, and she corrects him. No. I was liberated. And then Tuttle's like, okay, like, you see all the files and shit on my desk. I will look into it. Get the fuck out of here. And Teva and his cool bomber jacket go to leave, but they leave with a warning. They say, something big is happening. The resurrection of Palpatine. Something big.
No! Somehow Palpatine returns.
The resurrection of Emperor Palpatine.
The Dead Speak.
Something big is happening out there, and you better act before it's too late to stop it. Spoiler, they won't stop it. They will not stop it.
We've seen it. It occurs badly for everyone.
We go to the outskirts of Navarro. Grief and the citizens are now refugees huddling in the dunes. And he promises them, listen, help is on the way. They're like, yeah, how? Where?
He's like, whom?
Whom? And it looks really bad. Elsewhere, on the mysterious planet that is home to the Mandalorian covert, Teva, following a homing signal, lands at the edge of Crocodile Lake just outside the forge. Every Mandalorian gun is on him. Paz Vizsla comes strolling out with that big fucking chain gun of his. He's like, get out of here. We don't like New Republic cops, and we get it. Honestly, we get it. Din then comes out as like, wait, how'd you find us? And Teva says, fortunately, someone I served with in the rebellion is among your ranks. And the R5 D4 unit comes out and it was like,
boop.
Oh, it was me.
It was me.
And let's stop here.
Yes.
We've already talked about the kind of twist of fate aspect of R5's you know, kind of coincidental relationship with R2 and how that really did shape the future of the galaxy. But I was not aware that this R5 actually was in the Rebel Alliance.
Yes. This is actually a really nice nod to something that I believe was established in the books, which was basically that R2 communicated to R5 that the galaxy was doomed and R2 was the only hope. And then R5 was like, cool, and just like loosened the hinge on his plate and like blew it up so that he could like sacrifice himself so that they would buy R2 and R2 would be able to go and help. This is incredibly sweet. I love when they build in these moments for droids. But can I just say as well, yeah, and I love R2. Doesn't that just sound like something that R2 would make up so he would get picked?
It's very self-aggrandizing.
He's such a little drama mama, you know?
He is an absolute egomaniac drama mama.
Yeah, and that was from the red one from a certain point of view, which it's just the funnest little stories where they imagine like different and expand on different scenarios. It was by Ray Carson. And that's where they established that R5 kind of did make this sacrifice. And I guess his mind was later wiped by Jawas. And that's why he kind of didn't know that he was a rebel. And he ends up with Peli. So I love that they referenced this. Those books are really fun. And yeah, R2 convinced this droid to blow his own head up. And he did it for the rebellion.
I guess Teva just kept R5's like cell phone number and knew.
He just texted somehow him. How did he do it?
I guess they have been like on a group chat, and like R5 has just been telling Teva, like, that's the only way Teva could have possibly known, right? It's like, if R5 is like, hey, guess what? I'm hanging out with that Mandalorian now. I've been roped into a mission to Mandalore.
If you've had the astromech in your ship, does it like you always remember it and you can always just be like, oh, I wonder what R5's up to, and like your ship can hunt him down? Because it was like a homing beacon. So yeah, we need to know. How did they get in touch? Is there a rebellion group chat? If so, seems like it should be better protected.
I agree. And as we've seen from the Delphi Ranger base, a lot of downtime. So, Teva would have a lot of opportunity to just text with friends.
I would also say I'm very happy to see more Teva. I love this character. I want to see... I live to see like a Teva spinoff, that kind of New Republic, like interesting X-Wing kind of slice of life stuff. So it's really fun here to see
iconic him. Bomber jacket. Like
iconic.
He looks great.
What a look. His whole look is just perfect.
What a look. Din, I think speaking for the covert here, is annoyed because the entire covert is going to have to move now. And that is just such a fucking hassle.
Well, can I just say something? Disagree. You should say thank you to Teva because you lot should have fucking moved a long time ago.
I agree. Listen, we've been on that corner for a long time, but now it's like you can't put it off anymore.
If I knew that all we had to do was go to the Crocodile Lake and visit them so they would move, I would have actually done it. Like, right. I would have done it because they need to move. This is bad times.
Then Paz Vizsla is like, well, hold on. We don't have to move if we commit murder. What if we just kill? What if we just kill this cop? What about that? And Din is like, no, you fucking psycho.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah,
war
what
machine,
is wrong with you?
Like, chill the fuck out.
You fucking maniac. And also, I owe this guy one, so we're not going to do that. Go like bond with your son or something. And then. Taking it from there, Din is like, okay, just now get out of here because you see what I'm dealing with. Vizsla wants to flat out murder you. And then Tiva's like, I can't because here is Grief Cargo's SOS message. So Din is like, well, let's just fucking, you're the New Republic. Just fucking go over there, do a bombing run and take him out. And he's like, well, Coruscant doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
So then Din, I think, asks a really good question. He's like, well, why do you care? Like, why, you don't know Grief Cargo from Adam. Like, well, why are you doing this? And he says, well, I care because I think the Empire is up to something. He says, the New Republic has to know the Empire is growing again. And basically someone needs to do something about it. And this is, I think, the only way I can get their attention. And he thinks that the pirate, you know, siege is part of this. And then Teva leaves and is like, hey, listen, I know you guys are going to leave anyway, but I promise I won't tell anybody about you, that you're here at fucking Crocodile Lake. You know, east of the Big Bird Plains.
I'm like, don't keep it a secret because these people are going to die if they stay here. Tell everyone if it means they're going to bloody move.
So he flies off and then Bo is like, okay, so what are you thinking about doing? Of course, Din has to go to help, but he can't do it alone. So Din then makes his pitch to the Mandalorians about why they should go to Nevarro and fight for Greef Karga. And he's like, listen, I know you fought against him when you rescued me in Grogu, but Greef is a different guy now. He's not, he unlike G-68, has legitimately had a change of heart. And so let's pay back that kindness, go to Nevarro's aid before it's too late. And then he's like, and by the way, if a pitch to your generosity doesn't do it,
how about capitalism?
What about some land, baby? What about some land? He says, Greef Karga offered me a tract of land on his independent world. Let's not forget that. Independent world. Perhaps it's time for us to live in the light once again on a planet where we are welcome so our culture may flourish and our children will feel what it is to play in the sunlight. And
then thinking about the baby again.
Thinking about that beautiful baby.
I think that baby would just love to just be chilling.
Absolutely. Paz Vizsla is then like, I can't let someone have the last word. I need to speak up. And he's like, okay, this is going to be a hard fight, fellas. Fellow Mandalorians, this is going to be a really, really hard fight. Perhaps some of us will die, as many of us did die when we fought against Karga on that very same planet, when we fought to save this guy over here's life and this baby over here's life. But dead Mandalorians, that sounds fucking great. Let's do it. I love war. I love war, guys. I love it.
This is a great turnaround because he starts off and he's like, why should we help this man? Yeah. But he's actually arguing like we should do it because we get to kill people.
Yeah, and he's straight up like, hey, a lot of us are going to die. I love it.
I've got a fucking massive gun, so it's probably not going to be me.
On for this. And then he's like, I've had my disagreements with this man, meaning Din Djarin, but he risked his life to save my son, who I don't really care about. I don't care about that kid, but he did do it.
I didn't fill up my jetpack, by the way.
And Bo-Katan Kryze also did not give up on my child's life, even when the rest of us did. This made me laugh so hard. He said, Bo-Katan Kryze did not give up on my child's life, even when the rest of us did. What a fucking burn.
He also burned himself. He sick burned himself.
Yeah, I know. What about you, Dad?
Everyone else was like, this happens all the time. I lost 3 kids to that bird last week. Like, but Bo was like, this is fucked up.
Yeah. And so anyway, this is the way. Let's get that real estate. They head off to Nevarro. And the plan, which Bo lays out as they're in hyperspace, is a 2-prong attack. Din and Bo will stay in the skies. The rest of the Mandalorians, with Pri at their head, also the armorer, will be the ground assault team. And then Bo gets her speech. She says, Nevarro's an independent planet, no longer under Imperial Remnant or New Republic protection. But it's that very independence that makes it appealing for you to settle. You lived there once, hiding in the sewers, which I don't think anybody needs to be reminded of that.
I don't think that's a good, like, I don't think that's...
Is that the pitch that we want? We were just like, hey, remember when you had to hide in the sewers and
you weren't accepted, now go and save these people? I don't know if it's the good pitch, but I get where she's going. She's like, once you were like peasant. This is a really funny pitch, actually, because she's basically saying, like, these people didn't accept you and made you hide underground like Morlocks.
But now you can be heroes. Right. And homeowners. Let's not forget that. Independent planet. Again,
that's
like,
a huge deal.
Hit all the important notes. X-ray vision will be back. And we're back. So they arrive, and the pirates are fucking running wild. They're having a grand old time. They're roaming the streets.
Pirates of the Caribbean out here. It's a Long Beach Pirate Festival that actually is a real thing that happens every year.
Pirate Christmas, Pirate Valentine's Day, rolled into one Pirate St. Patrick's Day. They're drinking. They're robbing. They're ravaging. Up waiters. They're loving it. Yeah. The Mandalorians arrive, and it's truly an amazing battle.
Animation on the ships is second to none here. Like, ILM's absolutely doing it. The fights are so good. There's so much good practical costuming, practical masks, creature work. It is absolutely delightful. And we get a great armorer moment that made me like, I was like fist pumping when I saw it.
The shot, which they used in the trailer, where you see the Mandalorians airdrop down onto the streets, mm-hmm. is so fucking cool.
It is so cool.
Some highlights from the battle. The ground assault is led by Paz. who I think needs to learn about cover. They're all just standing out in the middle of the street. They get pinned down in the town square. To relieve that, we see the armorer go to work with her hammer and tongs as weapons. Really, really
so
cool.
So cool.
Takes out a pirate firing position that was stationed in Grief Karga's once luxurious office, hopefully to be luxurious again. We get to see Baby Yoda up in the sky riding in Din's lap, taking
Dude,
it all in his beautiful
whole
baby
time
eyes.
During this like crazy battle, the baby's just chilling in his dad's lap. It's unbelievable.
Then we need to strap him in, right?
I know. Not even like a single, I don't know. That's just the dad, or maybe he's staying there with the Force, but it was very
cute.
Get
a little baby seat, a little baby Bjorn or something for that
baby.
Yeah,
baby Bjorn feels like it's coming.
The Nikto pirate Vane, remember him? A complete non-factor in
yeah,
this fight.
Yeah, just useless.
Absolutely useless. Didn't do a damn thing except for talking shit in his little snub fighter.
Which is funny because he's the one who got let, he was the one who survived. So I'm like, if you're going to cause the problems and come for the vengeance, then do something. But he doesn't. He just breezes off. He's like, we're not going to
immediately flees. Immediately is like, no, I'm not. Hey, looks like things are going bad. I'm out of here. But like has, I guess, the class to give notice to Pirate King Shard. Like he doesn't he's like, hey, Pirate King Shard, I just want you to know, I've been giving my 2-week notice 2 weeks ago. I'm leaving right now. He just like,
bye.
Yeah, bye. And finally, Din and Bo managed to blow up Pirate King Shard's ship before he can blast the city. This is what a fucking murdering maniac this fucking spinach head is. He just is like, I guess I'll just like kill everybody. But they blow up his ship before that can happen. And the citizens get to get some payback because the pirates were fleeing the destruction of their forces, flee right into the arms
very
of
Western
the
Western moment there.
Yeah, the vengeful
it's like the,
citizens.
They get to take over the gang that's come into their town.
Grief Karga. Did we expect anything else? He's good to his word. He says, all the land from the Western Lava Flats to Bullet Canyon are now the home of the good people of Mandalore. Hey!
Yeah, baby. I love that. This is the way. So let's get that real estate.
There's so much real estate out here.
Are they actually going to build a house or will they just find the most dangerous natural spot and just chill outside? It's the Mandalorian, so you never know.
I hope they live.
Where's a giant lizard live? Can we live next to him?
Well, I would expect they're going to live above ground now, right? Because of what happens next. Pause, then comes over to Bo is like, hey, the armor wants to have a word. So he leads her back into that sewer where they used to live. And the armor is in her old forge, just kind of looking around. And she makes some small talk. And then she's like, hey, take off your helmet. What? Bo is like, the creed and
is this a trick?
Yeah,
which I think she's fair to ask, honestly.
Yeah, there's the creed and Din had to fucking dive into the waters of the living waters under the fucking mines of Mandalore. Like, I could just take off my helmet now. And the armorer says, listen, the diaspora, the Mandalorian diaspora is all over the place, and we subscribe to the creed, but many don't. But we have to, if we're going to unite as a people, if we're going to take our planet back, we have to walk the way together. And that means all Mandalorians. I was taught the Mythosaur existed only in legend, and yet you saw it. It's a sign that the next stage is upon us. You have walked both worlds. You are the one who can unite us. So the armorer is basically saying, you're going to be our ambassador to the diaspora out in the galaxy. And we need to go and retake Mandalore. And I think this is actually a smart and good idea from the armor.
Yes.
Listen, all respect to the Mandalorian recruiters who have been growing the ranks of the Mandalorians.
They've been hustling.
Off camera. But they need a lot more folks if they're going to take back the planet. And that means reaching out to, you know, the folks we saw in the Clone Wars who didn't wear their helmets all the time. You know, like that's the other thing that's kind of like unspoken is like this covert is essentially descendants of Death Watch, who had a much more hardcore Mandalorian warlike take on the Mandalorian culture and lifestyle. And they were very antithetically against everything that was going on Mandalore proper. And particularly the leadership of the Duchess Satine. And so this is a really cool gesture, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And one that Bo is really uniquely suited for.
Yeah. It's a huge moment and it makes a lot of sense.
I agree.
Because could it feel like slightly jarring or kind
it
of
is a lot of
is it
we're
is
flip-flopping
it very,
now, aren't it, we?
There's some flip-flop in here, but I will say the thing I think they did that was really smart here that makes it believable is the mythosaur.
Mm-hmm.
The armorer basically sat with it for a week or a few days or whatever and was like, if she saw the mythosaur, that's like, I need to fucking sort my shit out. Like, I need to, this is someone who clearly has some kind of role to play. Now, what does that role look like? And then she thinks, well, we really struggle with recruiting new people. We're recruiting a lot of children, baby dragons. Like, oh, wait, there's actually like thousands, tens of thousands of Mandalorians all over the galaxy, some of whom used to follow Bo.
Yeah.
And maybe by becoming more inclusive and accessible, we can create like a unified Mandalore. And I think it's really good. Very smart.
I think it's really great. Very, very smart.
Yeah. And Bo is the perfect person.
I completely agree. I think that what the armorer, without laying it out, is aiming for is like, okay, if you are a orthodox follower of the creed, mm-hmm. then just don't take your helmet off. You never take it off.
Yeah, but
if
stay with the covert. You know,
yeah, but if you're a more
are,
secular Mandalorian, mm-hmm. we welcome you as well.
Yeah.
And this is great. So the armor and Bo without her helmet, hair, I don't know how she keeps her hair looking so good.
Oh my God, don't even get me. That's what I want to know. How is the hair always looking so good? Every single
perfect.
Day, same length, not one single split
no
hair.
No frizzes.
Perfectly straightened.
What's going on?
Stunning, no roots, unbelievable. I mean, that's the biggest mystery of the Mandalorian.
I completely agree.
How does her hair stay that good? Never any static after being
What's
under that metal?
Up? What
I
is
need
up?
To know the secret.
So the armor and Bo, no helmet, go to the other Mandalorians, and the other Mandalorians are like, what? Excuse
what
me,
is
what
is occurring?
What is happening? And the armor is like, okay, this is what's going on. Bo is our ambassador. She is going to bring the rest of the exiles to us,
mm-hmm.
and together we're going to retake Mandalore. And Paz, and I get it, Paz.
Me too.
Is
me
a
too.
Little annoyed. He's like, what the fuck is this?
But she took her helmet out off like...
Yeah. And then she's like, no, listen, Bo-Katan has walked both worlds. She can bring all the tribes together. It's time to retake Mandalore. And I think, listen, we've been saying, why don't you just go to Mandalore? And mm-hmm. I think that this is the right way to... This is smart. This is a good way to do it. Because you can't send any messages on the surface of Mandalore. Use Navarro as a base to bring the diaspora together, mm-hmm. and then let's all go to Mandalore.
In this way, I think the armorer finally did something right. Because we were like, why don't they just go to Mandalore? Why don't they just go to Mandalore? But I think she's right. Get like 100, 200, 500, 1,000 Mandalorians together on some kind of same page and then try and go back to the once poisoned, like wildly overgrown and dangerous planet that you once lived on. Also, I will say, I think we can take a we were right. Because we did say Bo was going to be the one who would potentially ride the Mythosaur, who would reunite the Mandalorians. This is great. So happy. I also want to congratulate Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, who essentially wrote themselves out of a corner here by making okay for Mandalorians to wear a helmet or not wear a helmet.
Well,
love
it was previously
that.
Not okay. Now it's okay.
Now it's okay. And it kind of explains away some of the bigger characters, one of whom we're likely going to see soon as well, I feel like, after this episode. They're retaking Mandalore. Good for them.
Later, in deep space, I would assume somewhere by the, outside of Coruscant mm-hmm. in the inner rim somewhere.
Yeah, some kind of outer rim situation.
Yeah, Captain Teva, just by luck. And by the way, space is a big place, so.
Very big.
Fill out your fucking lottery ticket now.
Maybe it was the Force. Maybe the Force was guiding him.
I don't discount it. I honestly love it. Captain Teva comes across a transport ship, heavily damaged. Absolutely wrecked. The pilot, you could see some of the crew, their corpses in there floating around. And he learns that this is the craft that was moving Moff Gideon.
He was right.
Ostensibly to trial, right?
He knew it.
And he scans the wreckage, and there's a little chunk of Beskar stuck in the side, and it leads, we believe, our friend Teva to to wonder if Mandalorians did this. Dun, dun, dun!
Dun, dun, dun! It's obviously a frame-up. I just need to say that. Like, no suspense. Like, it's a fucking frame-up.
Absolutely a frame-up.
I also just want to shout out, like, this moment, there's this unbelievable...
Clearly a frame-up.
It's such obviously a frame-up. But, like, this moment of this, like, empty, floating ship, there's this really brilliant anime called Memories, and there's a short in it called Magnetic Rose, and it's like a trapped room horror where a guy finds an empty floating spaceship and they kind of go and explore it, and it's really beautiful. And this was giving me big vibes of that. You should go and watch it. It's really good. But yeah, it's a frame up. I'm sorry, bro. Teva should know this. Like, it's so obvious. He's like, it's Beskar, and the guy's on the radio is like, oh, Mandalorians did this. And I'm like, bro, you know Mandalorians didn't do this. They would. Why would they leave the Beskar? This is a frame up.
They love the Beskar.
They love Beskar. Turned into a tiny child's helmet. Like, just leave it be. It's a frame up.
Their entire culture is based on finding any scrap of Beskar and returning it to the community. And what, like a chunk of the armor broke? Come on. Why? How? Why?
No.
No. This is clearly Neo-Imperialist. This is a Neo-Imperialist plot, probably masterminded by Moff Gideon and whoever he's working for. To kill the Mandalorians.
Okay, I got a crazy other option that I just realized. Okay. I do believe it's a frame-up. This is an empty Imperial ship. What if a Mandalorian had gone there to like scavenge it or look for the Darksaber or something, and it was like Sabine doing some archaeologist kind of shit? That would be really cool, right? Like, I do believe it's a frame up, but I feel like after we met Zeb, I feel like Sabine, I had not expected that this could be a space where we could see her, but I'm feeling like now.
Well,
that's more than likely.
I kind of agree. Listen, if Bo is going to go out there.
Exactly.
And bring the Mandalorians together.
Why would it be random Mandalorians? Surely you're going to at least get one, the most famous other Mandalorian that we haven't seen.
It makes so much sense to me that at least for the finale, the assault on Mandalore, when they fight whoever is behind all of these machinations around Avarro, we're going to see her.
We have to, or at least some of her art. That's the other thing. We haven't seen any of the iconic art. Oh, I also just realized, thanks to these incredible notes by super producer Saul, next week's episode is Bryce Dallas Howard. I am so stoked, because do you remember how like fucking game-changing her Boba Fett episode
was? Absolutely wonderful.
Like, I am ready to see what she does with this like frame-up kind of mixture of this mystery where the New Republic's now going to potentially be seeing the Mandalorians as a threat, but we also have the Mandalorians doing like outreach for the first time and living publicly. I think that's going to be really interesting.
I'm very, very, very excited. What a fun episode.
So much fun.
Up next, Nerd Out.
In today's Nerd Out, where you tell us what you love and why, or tell us about a theory that you're excited to share. Mike shares some thoughts about what the end of the Mandalorian series could look like.
Hey, Jason, Rosie, long time, first time. In your recap of Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 1, you talked about the potential for an epilogue time jump at the conclusion of the series to when Grogu could be the leader of Mandalore. I can't stop thinking about that possibility, and I want to build on that idea. 30-ish years after, so this is Mike's idea, 30-ish years after his adventure with Din, Grogu is sitting in a throne room on Mandalore. A mysterious figure enters. Who could it be? A yellow lightsaber-wielding Rey Skywalker? She's looking for other Force-sensitive leaders of the galaxy to create some sort of new Jedi Order. Wow. I do love this. I absolutely love it. We've seen how Disney has loved bringing back Star Wars actors into the movies and series. I'm at best, of course. And it seems like it could be a fun way to bring Daisy Ridley back to reprise her iconic role a handful of years from now after more seasons of The Mandalorian. Love the show. Thanks, Mike. Mike, that's really cool. I love it.
It's so much fun. I also think, like, look, we can always fudge a timeline in Star Wars.
We have to fudge it by maybe a few centuries with Grogu, but that's okay.
Fudge it. You know what? Maybe because he's got this connection to Mandalore and the Force, by the time he's like 100, he's a little bit more. You know, let's be real. Yoda was like 800 and he was looking old.
He was
so
nine.
Where's the middle there?
He was nine and change.
Nine and change. Like, he's living. And he was old. So what I love about this is it makes a lot of sense as a fun theory to kind of expand upon, because we know that they are connecting this to the trilogy series now.
Yes, absolutely. Like to the
later trilogy.
That's exactly
so the idea of somehow connecting Rey after delving into this whole Palpatine situation. There's something really fun there. And I've always wanted to see a kind of young Jedi adventures, like Jedi school, Jedi training. And it could be cool to see Grogu represent a Mandalorian insight into that.
I mean, listen, Grogu's going to be with us forever. There's no world in which...
He will outlive us.
He will outlive us. He will be here. They're making Star Wars movies and shows in 60 years. Grogu will be part of it. And so...
Teen Grogu.
You know, it's only a matter of time until Grogu appears in a Star Wars movie. Like, that will happen, right? It just feels like it'll happen.
Yeah, you just make a Star Wars movie called The Child. I mean, it's not... It's like they're making money quickly when that happens.
Thanks, Mike. If you have theories or passions you want to share, hit us at xray@crooked.com. Instructions in the show notes. That's it for us. Rosie, plugs, 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 plugs.
Plugs. You can find me here. Listen to X-Ray Vision. It's cool. You're already listening to it, but keep doing it. We appreciate it. I'm Rosie Box at Letterboxd and Instagram. And yeah, just read comics. Read comics, buy comics, go to your local comic book shop, ask them to start a pull list, and buy some of those good comic books, because they're the reason that we're all here talking about this stuff.
Watch Primo on May 19th on Amazon Freevee, wherever you stream.
You better watch it. It's very good.
Amazon Freevee, May 19th, watch Primo. Catch the next episode on Wednesday, April 5th for more Yellow Jackets. Plus, due to popular demand, we'll be covering Succession on our Wednesday episodes in the Previously On segment. And next week on our Friday episode, we'll also be covering the 2-episode finale of The Bad Batch alongside with the next episode of The Mandalorian. So folks, catch up.
And yes, in case you have forgotten from me just telling you 2 seconds ago, let us remind you that we are bringing you 2 episodes a week of X-Ray Vision. 2. Subscribe on YouTube, where you can now watch full episodes of the shows as well as listening to them. And follow at XRVPod on Twitter, where we're always sharing cool stuff. And check out the Discord, where you can meet a ton of great people, loads of fun conversations, super passionate, and sometimes me and Jason pop up too.
5-star ratings, 5-star reviews. We love them. We gotta have them. You gotta give them to us. Here's one from Emily K. A weekly must. Love this pod. Historically not a comic reader, so getting insights into nerd stuff from the comics is great and inspiring me to pick up more comics and find new characters. Thank you, Emily!
That's the dream.
X-Ray Vision is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Chris Lord and Saul Rubin. The show is executive produced by myself and Sandy Gerard. Our editing and sound design is by Vasilis Fotopoulos. Dylan Villanueva and Matt DeGroote provide video production support. Alex Relaford handles social media. Thank you, Brian Vasquez, for our theme music. See you next time.
Bye!